Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
And now we continue our series, Your Anecdotal Census, a people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010. We're going county by county, and today it's Kings County, also known as Brooklyn. It is New York's most populous borough with more than 2.5 million people. It's gone from 24% immigrants in 1980 to 37% immigrants in 2008, according to the Census Bureau. Median household income, $43,000 a year, slightly less than it was in 1990, according to Census. So listeners, call in to tell how your Brooklyn community is different today than it was 10 years ago. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post it to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. Do you have a story about change in your own life over the last decade that you think represents a larger trend? Who's coming and who's moving out of your community? How is the housing boom, housing bust, change your community? What's an untold story of change in your community that needs to be told? But mostly, how is your Brooklyn community different today than it was 10 years ago? And do you have a story about change in your own life over the last decade that you think represents a larger community trend in your Brooklyn community? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. We'll have various guests along the way for this. And with us first, from the neighborhood of Sunset Park, which has been changing so much, Paul Mack, CEO of the Brooklyn Chinese American Association, and Murad Mo Awada, Environmental Justice Coordination at the activist group UpRose and a lifelong Sunset Park resident. Welcome to both of you. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
And I want to ask you first, well, I want to give some basic stats first, forgive me, about Sunset Park for everybody else to hear. It's a community of about 150,000 people, bordered by Bay Ridge in the south, Park Slope on the north, and Borough Park on the east. It's one of the most diverse neighborhoods of all New York City. It has the second biggest Chinatown, residents from all over the Caribbean and Latin American, Orthodox Jews, and others. In the 2000 census, it was about 40% Latino, 30% Asian, and 35% what they call white or Arab, which, believe it or not, was a category. It was, however, only about 3% black. So, Paul Mack, the second largest Chinatown, is the one in Manhattan the biggest, or is the one in Flushing?
Well, probably the one in Flushing, but however, the numbers are pretty arguable, I guess.
Why Sunset Park as such a hub of Chinese New York?
Well, in the 1980s, due to the overflow in Manhattan Chinatown as well as in Flushing Chinatown, so people were looking for a new place to move to, and Sunset Park just fit the bill perfectly, entering directly, leading people to Manhattan Chinatown where people were working at the time. And for the last 20-somewhat years, I think has been a number of turning points in each one of the census. And basically, now we are talking about 150,000 Asian population that are living within the Sunset Park and the surrounding neighborhood, and about 1,000 Asian operator businesses that are also in the area.
How does the Chinese population in Sunset Park differ from the population in Manhattan's Chinatown? Is it people from different parts of China, or different by class or profession or whatever?
Well, Manhattan Chinatown has been there for over 100 years, so basically it attracts a lot of old-timers, whereas with the new wave of immigrant population, basically people are looking for something a little bit more affordable and more residential, and definitely at the time Sunset Park was pretty empty, and so they just came, and little by little in the early 1990s, people are calling the Sunset Park as a Brooklyn Chinatown, but that was only the beginning. And through the 2000 census, and now we are just working with the 2010, basically the number has been a couple hundred percent increase for the last 10-15 years.
And Murad, I guess you're part of what the census saw as the white or Arab population. Tell us a little bit about your upbringing in Sunset Park as an Arab American. You've lived there all your life, right?
Actually, Sunset Park has been constantly diverse. It's predominantly Latino, Asian, and, you know, it has its Caribbean folk and, you know, the Arabs. When I was growing up, there were Arabs around, but as I gradually got older, the community kept getting bigger. And even till now, it's huge now in Sunset Park. So
let me ask you one of the questions that we're asking our listeners. Do you have a story about change in your own life over the last decade that you think represents a larger trend in Sunset Park or in Brooklyn as a whole?
I think Sunset Park has developed me to become a fighter for change. Sunset Park, despite it being beautiful, the name, it's an environmental justice community, and it has a lot of the city's environmental burdens in it. So I began fighting for Sunset Park at a really young age, at 10 years old, and I'm 23 now. And it's been a crazy, hectic ride, but I love fighting for something that means so much to me, where I call home.
Since that's your particular interest, what's an example of environmental change in Sunset Park that motivates you?
We had a urban forestry project, and we still have one. And before, if you were to walk up and down Sunset Park streets, you wouldn't see any trees. And now we have a whole bunch of trees lining the streets, and they're pretty much still baby trees, but they're growing in.
And Paul Mack, same question. Do you have a story about change in your own life or your own family or on your own block over the last decade that you think represents a larger trend in Sunset Park or in Brooklyn as a whole?
Well, in the 1980s, when I first graduated, I was working for a local development group trying to revitalize the Sunset Park, especially 8th Avenue. At the time, 95% of the storefront were vacant. And now seeing what it is today is really amazed me. And the fact that being the founder of the organization that has been around for the last 23, 24 years, but basically our organization was here before the so-called Brooklyn Chinatown, and really happy to see that our organization is also expanding alongside with the community. Today, the Chinese population or the Asian population not only limit to Sunset Park, but also into Bay Ridge, Borough Park, Bay Ridge, and Shipside Bay. So basically, looking at the 2000 census, basically the Asians are really spreading all around the Borough of Brooklyn.
So listeners, call in, tell us how your Brooklyn community is different today than it was 10 years ago. As we continue our series, Your Anecdotal Census, A People's History of the New York City Area from 2000 to 2010. As I said earlier, we're going county by county, week by week, and today, this week, it's Kings County, also known as Brooklyn. So how is your Brooklyn community different today than it was 10 years ago? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Or post to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. Liam in Park Slope, you're on WNYC. Hello, Liam.
Hi, Brian. I'm calling because, I grew up in Park Slope. I'm in my late 30s now, and the neighborhood has just taken off. I mean, there are kids everywhere. There are young families, a lot of young professional families that commute from Manhattan. There's parks everywhere. I mean, it's really turned into a beautiful neighborhood, really. It's outstanding. I mean, I love growing up there myself, but, you know, I want to be a kid in Park Slope.
Is there a downside? You know, people complain about the gentrification and people complain about the prices, even as they talk about how the neighborhood has beautified. So do you see it in both, you know, kind of in both directions?
I do. I will say I don't have kids, but I think that in terms of home pricing, it just made the neighborhood a lot nicer. I mean, that's actually a tough question because I think I like it a lot more now than I did before, but I hear that a lot. That's an argument that you hear all the time. And, I mean, that's been for the past 10 years you've been hearing that, it's getting too expensive to live in Park Slope, lots of things. But I think that overall it's been a great change, and it's just a friendly, nice community. And I mean, that's I love Park Slope, and I don't think I'll be leaving anytime soon,
Liam,
even if I don't have kids.
Liam, thank you so much. So Paul Mack, has the gentrification of Park Slope affected Sunset Park nearby?
Yes, I am the right guy for the right question. I lived in Parkville for over 20 years from the year 1980 to over 2000. Parkville has been the one of the better neighborhood throughout the borough of Brooklyn, has been the fact for many years. So basically, I think we are just seeing that when the real estate as a whole is going up the roof. So basically, I think that just reflects that. People has also been talking about moving from Parkville to Sunset Park, but however, the real estate prices are just so crazy, especially around the Asian community, because as a tradition, they would love to stick together, and as a result, it's really creating overcrowding in the neighborhood. When I first came to 8th Avenue, a storefront and two apartments, they were selling for $50,000, and now my understanding is that they go for $2.5 million, so a lot of changes, and I think a lot of old-timer and newcomer has been benefiting from the real estate boom, you know, no doubt about that.
Mawad, as a community activist, a community leader in Sunset Park, is there anything you're hoping to see in the census results that will help your community meet its needs?
Well, I think that the numbers are going to really increase, so that's great. Because we've seen the community boom with our Asian community at 8th Avenue and our Latino community down by the 4th, 5th, 6th Avenue. We've seen the whole community boom with the numbers. There's also been a lot of there's also been gentrification in Sunset Park. And the whole thing with gentrification is that the same thing that happened in Park Slope, I'm not sure how great it is in Park Slope with the gentrification there, but when gentrification happens, it takes away part of the culture of the neighborhood. So it's really sad seeing it happening in Sunset Park now.
By the way, Paul, I heard somebody say that the concentration of Chinese folks along 8th Avenue is inspired partly by the number 8 being lucky in Chinese culture and 8th Avenue translatable as road to wealth. Do you buy that theory?
Well, yes and no. Yes, definitely the number 8 is a good luck number for Chinese and many Asian communities. But however, I think at the time, while being the founder, I was here before they came. So basically, I think the N line that go directly to Chinatown, as well as the B line that would go directly to Chinatown, I think that was the main factor and the affordability of the real estate. And I think in any history of the development of the Chinatown, first of all, it has to be abandoned so that the little mom-and-pop store will be able to come in and open up their little business, and little by little, they attract bigger and better business. And I think in Manhattan Chinatown, it happened that way. So it's Flushing Chinatown, and it's also happening in Sunset Park, Bensonhurst, and Shipside Bay in Brooklyn.
All right. Two community leaders from Sunset Park, our first guests in this segment for today, Paul Mack, CEO of the Brooklyn Chinese American Association, and Mawad Mo-Awada, Environmental Justice Coordinator at UpRose and a lifelong Sunset Park resident. Thank you both so much.
Thank you very much.
And we will continue with other guests and more of your calls from anywhere in Brooklyn. Call in to tell us how your Brooklyn community is different today than it was 10 years ago. On our series, Your Anecdotal Census, A People's History of the New York City Area from 2000 to 2010. We're going county by county, week by week. Today, it's Brooklyn. WNYC, and now we do continue our series, Your Anecdotal Census, A People's History of the New York City Area from 2000 to 2010. We're going county by county, and today it's Kings County, also known as Brooklyn. It is New York's most populous borough with more than 2.5 million people. To repeat some basic stats, it's gone from 24% immigrants in 1980 to 37% immigrants in 2008, according to the Census Bureau. Median household income, $43,000 a year, slightly less than it was in 1990, according to the census. So listeners, call in to tell us how your Brooklyn community is different today than it was 10 years ago. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. We'll get back to your calls in just a second. Our next guest who we welcome in, who will take some calls with me, is none other than the president of Brooklyn, Borough President Marty Markowitz. Borough President, welcome back to WNYC.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. Thank you very, very much.
And you've been in politics since you were a tenants' rights activist in Flatbush in the early 70s, if I'm pegging it right.
You're right. 1971, I formed the Flatbush Tenants Council.
And then an assemblyman for 20 years. And
State senator,
forgive me. And now more than, I don't know if you want to be associated publicly with that body anymore, but now more than 8 years as borough president. And can you even begin to say what the biggest changes are that you've seen in the borough during all that time?
Well, of course, it's been amazing as a lifelong Brooklynite and now as someone, a proud member of the most exclusive club in America, the Medicare Club. I must tell you that it's a different Brooklyn than when I was a boy, that is for sure. And overwhelmingly, I think it's very positive for this and future generation of Brooklynites. So I don't know where to begin. I guess we can begin. Let's begin with tourism. I mean, Brooklyn was not exactly the center of tourism 10 years ago and beyond. And today, increasingly, Brooklyn has become the destination of choice for tens of thousands of folks throughout the globe that are coming to Brooklyn as their first choice for tourism. And that's very important for our economy. Increasingly, we are dependent on that for job generation generating. But it's certainly a big change from
so that's a good
10
thing.
Years ago.
How about specifically during your time as borough president, which is roughly the 10-year census period
yes.
we're focusing on, how do you see the demands on the office of borough president changing in ways that reflect change in the borough in terms of community needs?
Well, I mean, definitely down zoning has been a smart zoning, you can call it, has been far more in demand as neighborhoods throughout Brooklyn have joined together in demanding, and appropriately so, efforts to preserve their neighborhoods and to stop it from uncontrolled growth where it's out of character with those particular communities. Areas like Northern Crown Heights, for instance, or Victorian Flatbush, just to name two areas that are very, very important to be preserved. So that's changed. No question that over the past 10 years, the desire of residents to preserve the density and the contextual aspects of their neighborhood has certainly increased. And borough presidents, in this case me, have responded very aggressively, working closely with the community boards, with the city planning commission, certainly with the mayor's folks, in making sure that we downzoned those neighborhoods in the borough that should be preserved as low-density areas, and landmark certain other areas, such as parts of Prospect Heights and Crown Heights North as well, Midwood Park, Fisk Terrace, just to name a few.
Right.
So that's changed over the past 10 years, no question about it. Probably areas that have been, certainly it's been some contention, upzoning, or where multifamily buildings, the demand in Dumbo, for instance. I mean, listen, I got to tell you, as a boy, I don't think anyone ever ventured into that area. I hate to tell you. It was primarily industrial or abandoned industrial. Of course, I remember when the artists started moving in there. But who knew, you know, 25, 30
right.
years ago that Dumbo
right.
would become one of the most desirable multifamily communities to live in.
And,
yet for the creative arts,
indeed.
It's become a tremendous home.
Even
and
the
digital entrepreneurs.
Right, absolutely. And who would have thought? The name itself, of course, Dumbo is an acronym for Down Under the Manhattan
Bridge
Overpass. It just sounds like a dangerous place to go. Don't go down under the Manhattan Bridge Overpass.
No, of course, no longer. Now, of course, believe me, including yours, it would be, it's increasingly difficult to afford to live there. There's no question about it. But it is bringing in those digital entrepreneurs, those young people that are creating those new industries. And that brings us to the next part, this whole creative industry that has taken a home in Brooklyn. There's no question about it.
And, so and now I'm going to have to ask you to hold that one for the moment. I want to get some more callers in here. Borough President Marty Markowitz is my guest, and we're asking, how is your Brooklyn community different today than it was 10 years ago as part of your anecdotal census project? Alex in Fort Greene, you're on WNYC. Hello, Alex.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
Fort Greene, I think, has undergone one of the biggest changes in the last 10 years in Brooklyn. Huge changes. I think the perception of Fort Greene changed tremendously, and then once the perception changed, it was like the floodgates opened, and all kinds of people that never would have gone to Fort Greene have come to Fort Greene. I'd say some of the first signs of big changes in some of these little neighborhoods that go from intimate little neighborhoods to destination neighborhoods, where suddenly there's events in Fort Greene, and everybody from everywhere comes to these events. And you know, people love that Brooklyn flavor, and so they try to hang on to it. But at the same time, it gets a little trampled. And some of us that remember it from a little while ago, it gets a little watered down. It's not as real as it used to be.
Alex, thank you. With some of the good and the bad of the changes in Fort Greene.
By the way, I don't agree, Brian. I don't agree.
Go ahead.
Fort Greene is one of the most dynamic communities, not only in Brooklyn, but in the city of New York. It is one of those rare areas of income and ethnic diversity, a celebration of diversity that exists right there in Fort Greene. Between those unbelievable, innovative restaurants, a bookstore that opened up recently owned by two women, a bear hall owned by an African-American man brought up in England. I have to tell you something. What's going on there, I marvel. And, of course, I hang out too much at a place called Cake Man Raven, the best red velvet cake in America. And, Brian, I look at every day increasingly.
Here's actually a little counterpoint to Alex in Fort Greene from Martin in Fort Greene. Martin, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. It's not actually a counterpoint. I have to applaud what's going on. I've been here for about almost 40 years, and it's been quite a change from the time that we had prostitutes on the corner. There were abandoned buildings, decaying brownstones, and there were a few people who, like us, who couldn't afford to move into Park Slope or buy a brownstone in Park Slope, who took on some of these construction projects. These marriage testing construction projects, and happily we hung on. And now what we have in BAM is an absolute treasure of a cultural institution,
right,
growing by leaps and bounds. There are two blocks away,
right,
is the Irondale, where Rule is now producing a play. It's absolutely astounding what's going on here. When we moved here, the New York Times wouldn't deliver to this neighborhood. Now, of course, every other house has Times sitting on the doorstep.
Martin, thank you very much. Let's go to another.
He's absolutely right.
Now, we have a couple of quick takes to drop in here on from other places in Brooklyn. Crystal Bob Semple, Borough President, maybe you know her. She's the owner of Brownstone Books, which
absolutely
is an independent bookstore in Bedford-Stuyvesant, born and currently lives in the neighborhood. Crystal, hello.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
I'm good. So how do you see neighborhood change in Bedford-Stuyvesant over the last 10 years through the lens of a bookstore owner? Is it in the titles that people are looking for? Is it in the customers you have? How?
It's in the customers. It's in the customers. It's in the folks that are walking by our window every day on their way to the other businesses that have opened up. And that's part of the story as well. You know, Bed-Stuy was a lovely neighborhood, and in the vein of what Alan described, a place where you had people who were committed to preserving the neighborhood and fighting back all the things that were happening and really bringing about change. And what has happened in the last 10 years is that core group of people who were committed to taking this neighborhood and making it exactly what it could and should be has been joined by an even greater number of people that are working to do the same thing. So from my vantage point here at Brownstone Books, I see nothing but people coming into the neighborhood who are committed to making it a better place for families, making it a better and more commercially viable place to be and to do business. Folks who are taking on the school system and the challenges here in the neighborhood to say that we want something different for our families and the growing number of young families that are here, and really becoming a part of a lot of the things that have been established early on in Bedford-Stuyvesant. And it's wonderful because it's really a coming together versus, you know, a takeover of a neighborhood. And that's something that I think is very important and has to be underscored. The folks that are here now are really working on block associations and our merchants association to add versus replace what has been here historically.
In your African-American titles-oriented bookstore, how about bestseller in 2001 from the to the best of your recollection versus bestseller today, and does it reflect anything?
Well, it does reflect the change. I would say bestseller in 2001, to my recollection, probably Sister Soldier's book, The Coldest Winter Ever.
Uh-huh.
Bestseller in 2009, you know, I would say Say You're One of Them, which was one of Oprah's picks. So a very different type of reader, for sure.
There you go, from Sister Soldier to Oprah. Crystal Bob Semple, owner of Brownstone Books, independent bookstore in Bedford-Stuyvesant, thank you very, very much. And we move on next to somebody who WNYC is so proud to be associated with, Jesus Gonzalez, who is now a community organizer with Make the Road New York and a lifelong resident of Bushwick. He was one of our radio rookies from our Radio Rookie series. Jesus, do you know radio rookies just won a Robert F. Kennedy Journalism Award?
That's great.
So,
I won that award on the 34th annual, the Robert F. Kennedy Journalism Award for domestic radio.
You were part of the group.
Yeah, I won it a while back.
Oh, a while back, so you won that same award. Wow.
Yeah.
All right. So, from the vantage point of a lifelong resident of Bushwick, what are you seeing in the last 10 years? Biggest change.
Well, I think that is important to mention the housing market, because it trickles down into, you know, many of the other, like, improvements and also setbacks in the community. Bushwick, me growing up, it has been always a young community, 50% 18 years old and younger. Back 10
years
ago,
that's twice as much, more than twice as much as the city as a whole. So that's really a young community.
Yeah, it's a very young community. 10 years ago, there weren't enough youth services for us. 10 years later, there still are not enough adequate youth programs available to young people in this community. Before the annual, like about 10 years ago, the annual income was approximately $7,000. Then it rose up to about $16,000 to $18,000 a year. I suspect that it's going to be drastically different with this census because of the newcomers in the community. And speaking of newcomers, the New York Times a few years ago labeled Bushwick the new hotspot to move into. And since we just saw a drastic flux of newcomers, mm-hmm. You know, trendy, hipster, artsy folks who find the new housing affordable. And although we're thankful, as a community resident, I'm thankful that the empty lots don't exist as much. The empty lots and burnt down buildings was a stain of the blackouts in the 70s here in Bushwick and Bed-Stuy. But what came along with that is, you know, a few things came along. Aggressive behavior on behalf of police officers to young people, because young people hanging out on the street in front of a brand new condo is not marketable. And also the, you know, like, there are, like, new condos in this community that are not being bought out and not affordable to the neighborhood. Like, nobody's buying them because, I guess, the housing market is down. The recession, but...
And I hear you. And, Jesus, we're going to have to leave it there because we're running out of time. in the segment. So you put a lot out on the table, a lot of great information, and some of the classic things that happen when neighborhoods change, for better and for worse. And we're going to give the last word to Borough President Marty Markowitz until we take a break, and then bring on another guest from Brooklyn as the segment continues. Borough President, is there anything that you're looking for in the actual census results that would help meet community needs?
Well, I think we're going to learn a lot from the census. I'm particularly interested in the percentage of population of the maturer residents, because I think with the baby boomers, and I think that's a large segment, I know it's a large segment, that are up and coming here in the borough, that we're going to have to plan for not only Brooklyn getting younger with the young people that are starting families, but the unbelievable growth of people that are entering their mature years, and what kind of demands and services and housing that we're really going to have to really get down to. There's no question about it. So that's going to be a big thing. Also, transportation. I think it's very important. Neighborhoods like Red Hook and Dumbo and other neighborhoods that, because of their unbelievable growth, how are we going, and downtown and Atlantic Yards and BAM Cultural Center and Gateway in East New York, all of this, we're going to have to plan how we can maximize public transportation, maybe light rail. I mean, there's many different things that we have to look as our growth continues in our borough.
That is great.
So the Brooklyn brand is doing great. Brooklyn is doing great. Listen, we our unemployment rates, we've got to bring those down. And so there are challenges. Now, even though we're doing great in Brooklyn, there are challenges. We'll get there. And listen, that's why I say New York City begins in Brooklyn. It's truer today than it was 10 years ago.
All right. Borough President Marty Markowitz, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Rotate again. We'll bring on another guest in a minute. Your anecdotal census continues, a people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010. We're going county by county. Today, it's Brooklyn. More to come. And it is your anecdotal census, a people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010, going county by county, week after week. And this week it's Kings County, also known as Brooklyn. And our final guest for today in this is Marilyn Gelber, a former New York City Environment Commissioner who has recently started a foundation dedicated solely to funding community needs in Brooklyn. It's called, fittingly, the Brooklyn Community Foundation. Hi, Marilyn. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. It's a pleasure to join you.
Why this foundation specifically for Brooklyn?
Well, in some ways, the Brooklyn Community Foundation is emblematic of everything we've been talking about today. It's emblematic of the change, of the growth, and of the optimism in the future. At the same time, the Community Foundation recognizes that Brooklyn is a place with tremendous needs. I mean, the growth, the change, the immigration patterns, all of that doesn't necessarily translate to addressing problems that have been with us for a very long time. You know, as the largest borough in New York City, unfortunately, Brooklyn also has very large number of people living in poverty, very large number of young people who are neither in school nor at work. The needs are tremendous, and by creating a community fund for Brooklyn, part of what we hope to do is harness some of the new energy, the optimism. You know, we have a ton of socially conscious people here, really creative people working on in the nonprofit community, and this is the kind of fund, in a way, we're taking a page from WNYC's philosophy. It's not only a few wealthy people who are going to address needs. We as a community need to address needs, and so this is the first borough-wide philanthropy that's been created in Brooklyn to be a place where people can both give and serve and really, you know, do more to help make Brooklyn even better.
So what have some of your funding priorities so far been, and how do they reflect what you see as the borough's biggest needs?
Well, honestly, a lot is focused on education and youth, both in an immigrant community, which, you know, the needs may be very particular there, language, culture, literacy, but also, frankly, in communities where there has been less change, public housing. Brooklyn has more public housing than any other borough in New York City, and the numbers there are very troubling around high school graduation rates, and so we've put a lot of emphasis on working in public housing communities as well as new immigrant communities. So education, number one. I'd say the other area of need that we've been focusing a lot on is jobs, career readiness, which in some ways is a part of the education spectrum, just going a little bit further. And again, we've targeted those neighborhoods where there are there is particularly high unemployment or where there are opportunities, where you have creative nonprofit organizations working to create those job opportunities.
We've got about a minute left. Is there anything you're hoping to see in the census results that will help Brooklyn meet its needs?
Well, in many ways, the census will kind of verify the trends that we're seeing, that immigration doesn't stop. And at the same time, Brooklyn is now a place where people don't just sort of come here, do well, and leave. There are new families, new businesses taking root here. And I think the census is going to show a place of growing wealth, as well as a place where there continues to be tremendous needs. And the role of the Community Foundation is to somehow bridge that gap between the new wealth, the new creative group of people who are moving here, as well as ongoing needs in the community. And I think the foundation will provide that opportunity to bring Brooklyn together. We are so big, so many communities, so many people from all over the planet all wanting to come to Brooklyn. And I think creating a non-governmental civic institution that really is focused on giving and service is something that's just sort of the next step in the evolution.
Marilyn Gelber, executive director of the, who recently, forgive me if I'm getting your title wrong, I know you recently started the foundation dedicated solely to funding community needs in Brooklyn, called the Brooklyn Community Foundation. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
And thanks to all of you for your ears today and for your support. And that's it also for this week's edition of Your Anecdotal Census. Leonard Lopate is coming up right after the latest news on WNYC, FM and AM New York, and WNYC.org. It's 1201.